Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
Well, Mike, welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. I probably should have told you I'm Lee Brown, but you guessed because I saw that your name was Mike Brown on your screen. And hey, friends, he and I are not related because I'm an outlaw Brown anyway by marriage. And so Mike's wife is probably an outlaw Brown too. She feels my pain. But Mike, I'd love for you to tell our viewers and our listeners where you're located. You already said Loudoun County, but you don't sound like it. And so tell them a little bit about who you are and how you wound up on this podcast.
Yeah. So thanks, Lee. So we're located in Leesburg, Virginia. So we're in the far out western suburbs of the Washington, D.C. market. I'm the founder of Red Fox Capital and Red Fox Wealth, which is a commercial real estate investment and development company, and also a full service wealth management company.
So what have you done like for your whole life? Were you a developer before you got into the money side of things, or have you always been in money and banking, or what's your trajectory, Mike?
Yeah. So it really kind of spawned out of just experience and adaptability. So we were building up a lot of development projects, a lot of commercial real estate funds. And, you know, in the initial phase, you start to run out of money from your friends and family. So I started calling on investment advisors, you know, CPAs and such. And all the, you know, I went to all the financial advisors and they said, listen, this is a great opportunity. I said, you know, your clients need to diversify from Wall Street so we can offer these great products and services to you all and your client base. They all nodded their head, yes. And but then nothing ever happened. So I eventually figured out that they didn't want to lose their fees. So if they invest, took any of the money out of their accounts, their fees and control would disappear. And I thought that was terrible. So I made a deal with my partner that I was going to go get a job at Merrill Lynch and learn the inside. Now that's some crazy shit, right? So
I mean, so I was at Prudential Securities once upon a time. And okay. So Merrill Lynch was our big competitor back in those days. Few decades ago, nobody has to know how many ago, but yeah. This is cracking me up because when I got into stockbroking, my dad had a real estate background. One of the first things you're told is forget real estate.
Yes.
For the very reason you're talking about, that residual income comes from annuities and mutual funds and managed capital. So anyway, go ahead.
So I said, I'm going to learn the inside of this. And so went through all the hoopla of getting a job at Merrill Lynch, spent a couple of years there. And as you just said, they made it quite clear I couldn't talk about real estate. I couldn't talk about any products that they could not sell directly to the clients.
Mike, we should probably point out both of us were before there were REITs for stockbrokers.
Yes, correct. But the REITs, as far as the REITs go, that's right. That's what they would offer. But I would argue a REIT is a stock. It correlates with the stock market. So it's two different worlds. And
for you normal consumers, that's a real estate investment trust. And so when your stockbroker mentions REITs to you, it's exactly what Mike just said. It's real estate, but it's under a shell so that it operates as a stock and it will have its own returns and losses like a mutual fund does, but with real estate in it. They're a different kind of beast altogether. They're not typical real estate.
Right. So anyway, it came to the point where I knew I had to get out of there because they were going to get rid of me anyway. I left and I wrote a book about it. The book is called The Real Perspective.
Is it like Inside Scoop and Secrets?
Secret investments your financial advisor won't talk about. The big banks told me if you publish that, you will be fired.
Which means you had to publish it, right?
Exactly. So I did about 3 weeks ago, and we hit number one in about four categories, and it's going great. And so now I said, what we're going to do is bring it all onto the same table. So we can eliminate all the conflicts of interest and talk to a client and say, you know what, you know, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Jones, you should have X amount of money in private investments, whether it be commercial real estate, how precious metals. I don't care what it is. I personally prefer commercial real estate. So we created what we call integrated portfolio management. So we control, private investments that we can offer our clients and then kind of bring it all together. It's working out great.
And I will tell you, friends, if you have a financial advisor or a CFP or somebody out there who embraces a diversified investment class set that includes real estate and equities, then you've got somebody great. So you shouldn't feel like we're trying to slam your guy. What we're saying is, in the way the institutions are set up, almost all of the average and not right. Remember, we're not broad brushing, but a lot of the average folks out there absolutely will tell you real estate doesn't make sense. So I want to dive into the commercial sector if we can, because of course we're recording this in fourth quarter of 2020, which has been frankly hell on the commercial real estate sector. And we know that it's as a asset class heading into some really turbulent times as companies evaluate how much space they're going to need in the future as retail spaces figure out where they need to land to even ever compete with Amazon. Because I'm kind of concerned about Amazon's monopoly as small stores close and what restaurants are going to do. And so from your perspective in that 30,000 foot view of commercial as an investment class, what are you seeing as some forecasting in the market? Are you bullish or bearish, or does it depend on what day it is?
It depends on what asset class. Overall, I'm very bullish. You know, we usually lag about 18 months behind residential real estate. So we always are a little bit slower to the game on the way the markets react. General office space, like you just mentioned, I've been bearish on that asset class for some time, even before COVID. Because we've just seen the trends, you know, people working from home and doing all these kind of things, and everyone's shrinking their footprints. Retail is a good space where we've just created a new fund for. What you said, Amazon is a scary beast. What we call Amazon-proof retail. So either small regional shopping centers where you have your nail salon, your dry cleaners, the things that Amazon at least haven't figured out yet how to take control over, but they may sooner or later. And we've also created a fund with Dollar General stores. And we've built large portfolios with Dollar Generals that have performed extremely well through the COVID crisis. And they're just little cash cows. So we put a whole bunch together.
And I'm fascinated by how Dollar General does real estate. And friends, you may have noticed this in your communities. They don't build giant, fancy behemoth spaces. They do a lot of prefabricated buildings on their lot so that they could keep the cost in line and keep their prices in line. And they're still not the cheapest people on the street all the time, but they develop a loyal clientele. Yeah. And they're a really good sign for how not just what the uses of real estate space are over time, but the actual construction items and how that morphs over time. They go up like this, but it's brilliant to cut costs because materials are through the roof right now.
Well, they've kind of taken a different approach where McDonald's built their fortune on owning the real estate. And Ray Kroc always said, we flip hamburgers just to pay the real estate because that's where we're building our wealth. Dollar General flipped it and said, we want to keep our cash in the business. So let's get individual investors and developers to build all of our real estate. We'll sign 10-year leases. So what we do is go out, find it about 9,000 square feet, or build a building for them and do a 10-year lease. They pay us a great rent. We're able to give our investors 8% preferred return and then a big windfall at the end, probably about, you know, into the mid-teens, and everybody's happy.
So what do you think is going to happen to our skyscraper, very dense downtown business districts over the next 18 to 24 months? Because I agree with you that commercial does tend to lag residential, but COVID has put a foot to the accelerator in a lot of regards on that. And I'm curious about those spaces because I do see how a former shopping mall could be repurposed into residential space or into some kind of a flex space. But those big footprint downtown areas don't have as much flexibility. So what's your crystal ball saying there, Mike?
So, you know, we saw the trend about a decade ago. Everybody was moving back into the urban centers, the center cities. And then what we're seeing today is everybody's running back to the suburbs.
Never mind. We're going to go back.
We're going to get the hell out of here. You know, it's a good question. Some of the skyscrapers around the DC market is a special insulated area because all the government money are going up like crazy and huge rental rates. So that is an extreme issue. But New York City, for example, are losing tenants every day. And with the restaurant crisis, the retail crisis, I don't know. There's going to have to be a political change there, environment to bring them back. So you may have to start seeing some tax incentives or things to bring people back into the center city. But and on the residential side, and they've built, you know, wonderful mixed use properties, apartments, condos to get people there. The millennials seem to like those somewhat because they're not ready to buy a house, as you well know.
But they love buying investment property. It's fascinating to me. They don't want boots, but they want to own a real property.
Yeah, I just ran to one yesterday who bought a house, Jackson Hole.
Oh, nice.
And he's renting here. So he's going to set up as an Airbnb.
That's a great move. I mean, I think that's where the hospitality sector is going to be for a little while because that feels more clean and sanitized and secure than a giant hotel does. So it's the fluctuations are fascinating. And so speaking of fluctuations and how elected officials and legislation can have impact on markets, which you skated past in New York, and I'm allowing it because we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, who, full disclosure, is a friend of mine. Tim is the reason we got opportunity zones in our tax code, and I think it's one of the coolest things ever. So what are you doing in the investment side with opportunity zones, which if you're a consumer, what you should know about, you hear it in the news, basically it's tax incentives and deferred taxes on capital gains in areas that have traditionally been challenged. It's where capital doesn't want to go. They've been ignored. They're depressed. No jobs, no great retail shopping, healthcare options. So it's a way for capital to flow into ignored areas and do some revitalization. So I'm curious your perspective on that as a commercial guy.
Well, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Senator Scott. I think he's awesome. He should run for president soon.
He does. I told him, I said, I'll knock on every door.
Yeah.
He said, you need to stop, because I told him I'd be his spokeswoman. He said he couldn't have that because I run off too much. But I think he'd be amazing. And I really do hope he considers it for 24.
Yeah. You know, so the opportunity zones have been, you know, we've obviously, you know, researched them quite intensively because they're, you know, it's a great opportunity for high net worth individuals to just push away their capital gains. We found it difficult, and I think I think they've got to tweak a little bit of the opportunity zone language. We found it very difficult to meet some of the requirements as far as, you know, in the short time frame to get something through entitlement, something approved to construct as new development to increase that 100% valuation, all those different triggers that you have to do to meet requirements. And we just aren't able to turn a project around that quickly. Not to mention all of the large capital trying to go into the opportunity zones are kind of driving up property values. So we've kind of toyed with it, but we have not fully engaged in opportunity zones. But it's a great thing for investors, you know, looking for tax incentives. Absolutely.
Well, and it's as you mentioned, it's the Treasury rules that dictate what you can and can't do with great legislation. And that's why it's a constant pressure to make sure that the great ideas can be deployed, which is what you're doing with somebody's capital. And as we've kind of wandered around several different topics, I'm so curious to know, in your time working in and around real estate from an investment perspective and from a funding perspective, what's the craziest thing you've seen, whether it was a scenario you didn't expect or something that was an opportunity that jumped up out of nowhere? In Mike's life, what's that one story you tell over a glass of bourbon and say, y'all won't believe what I saw today?
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the first crazy things was when I first started commercial real estate many years ago was, you know, they always say you find your niche. You can't just put it on a piece of paper and go after it. So I got into heavy industrial real estate was what my ultimate niche. And I remember the first time I drove into this really ugly looking area. It was just dirty. Just buildings were disgusting. You're like, who in the hell would ever want to come back here? So I got a new listing because we have our brokerage company with a crane company. It was deplorable. And I said, we'll never sell this. And that opportunity just came out of nowhere. I mean, it didn't have public, it went on public utilities. It was just out in the middle of nowhere.
Wait. How do you have a property with no public utilities? It's an industrial site.
They were on well and septic.
That must have been some good dirt over there.
Well, the flowers are blooming everywhere. So, long story short, we sold the building to an investment group, and I think got that was like $3.6 million and flipped it a year later. And they increased their profit. I think they made about another $2 million. And I'm like, this heavy industrial is where it's at. And you would never in a million years think that opportunity was there. I mean, I remember the buyer came in and he had a shirt with his name embroidered on it. And I thought he was one of the cleanup crew or worked there. And little did I know, he was worth about $20 million who owned a big concrete company.
That's that old Tom Stanley book, The Millionaire Next
Door. That's correct.
Remember?
Absolutely.
You don't recognize millionaires because they don't always lease everything and go fancy because
they don't hang out at the country clubs and all the fancy restaurants, but they've got more money than all those guys put together.
So it changed you as a perspective changer, right? And so you think about that. We talk about our crazy shit. It's sometimes just the re-engagement of a different perspective that brings opportunity.
Right. So I traded in the Gucci loafers for a nice pair of boots and started working.
Forever. Good boots last forever.
Yeah. I just started working the industrial market and just had a blast. But the problem is Amazon, like you mentioned earlier, has taken over the industrial, the flex space. And it's really, it's pushing all these industrial users out of the area to the point where they can't afford the rents. Amazon's come into a lot of industrial areas, bought out leases, combined properties, and the e-commerce scene has really made an impact on the industrial space.
So Amazon on the, because I know we have a distribution center here, yeah, which was not in an industrial space. It's a very nice commercial business park. But you're saying in some markets, they're going into the giant, ugly industrial and transforming that into their distribution centers?
They are.
I mean, it's cheaper. That's your cheap real estate. And so you can reinvest in it.
Yeah, it's cheaper. They're in such need for space that they'll go just about anywhere. That and the big data centers, the big giant concrete tilt up boxes you see that run all the internet, you know, and all the cloud facilities are taking over also in a lot of our areas. And I think they're moving around the country.
Yeah, we've got a Google farm here on the outskirts of Charlotte. And, you know, we're grateful to have the jobs and the capacity closer to here. But you have to wonder about what the next iteration looks like. There's always a next iteration. I mean, it's just, where do you go to the front of that? But the last thing I got to ask you about, since obviously, you know, the money, you know, the legislation, you know, the real estate, what do you think about the attack on the 1031 tax-free exchanges happening in Washington, D.C.? Because you and I both know that most people who take advantage of the 1031 tax-free exchange are smaller businesses, smaller commercial owners, smaller investors who use that to leverage up into more real estate, which also frees up real estate for the market. What are you seeing on that front in your side of the business?
Well, I flip it over and I'll argue it in a different way. Two things. I think we are in the lowest tax bracket this country is going to see in a long time. I think, you know, with $27 trillion of debt and
growing,
there's only two things the politicians can do: stop spending or raise taxes. So we know what the answer is.
What politician has ever stopped spending?
Exactly. So taxes are going up. So a lot of times I would advise clients, just pay your taxes. A second issue with the 1031 is because of the short time horizon to identify another property. I see a lot of clients do that in a hasty manner and make more than a 15% capital gains mistake on the new property. So a lot of time
doing great due diligence on the replacement property because they're in a panic for time frames.
Yeah, right. Okay. Right. So I say, step back. You know, let's think about this. Let's look at, you know, your particular situation and make sure a 1031 really is a good, you know, solution for you.
I love that. And by the way, friends, this is why, if you're thinking in your head, holy smokes, this stuff's over my head, that's exactly why you always want to make sure you have a financial advisor, a tax advisor, to help you evaluate pros and cons of situations. as you grow your real estate empire from one house to three houses or three houses to a commercial industrial site that Amazon's trying to buy from you.
Mike, well, skyscraper.
If somebody's looking for information about what you do and how they could learn from you or find out more about what you have to offer, how's the best way for them to contact you and Red Fox Wealth besides buying your book, which it's behind you now, so they can probably see the picture of the yellow triangle. Yeah,
the real perspective. You can get that on Amazon. And two websites.
When we talk shit about Amazon, then we say go buy a book there. But you can probably also ask your small independent bookseller to order some from Mike, too.
Yeah, or just call me. I'll send you the book. You can go on my website. Actually, I've downloaded. If anybody wants a copy, I'll give you a free copy for all your listeners today. Send me an email at my private email address at MikeBrown1757@gmail.com. And you can see our websites at redfoxcapital.co and then redfoxwealth.com. Any questions your listeners have, I'd be happy to answer them and point them in the right direction if I can help them.
All right, guys. So all of that's in the show notes for this episode. So go click on that, find Mike's email and send him a note. He will be glad to help guide you with obviously really balanced advice based on a lot of experience and multiple angles of the business. Mike, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Lee. It was great. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, give me 5 stars, subscribe for more, because you're going to get a different angle every time you show up over here on Crazy Shit in Real Estate. I'll see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.